Chapter 17. Reach kept his eyes down. He had taken a quick look at Namarty, and it was all he needed. He had met the man 10 years before, when Reach had been sent to lure Jojo Joranum to his destruction, and one look was more than enough. Namarty had changed little in 10 years. Anger and hatred were still the dominant characteristics one could see in him, or that Reach could see in him at any rate, for he realized he was not an impartial witness. And those seemed to have marinated him into leathery permanence. His face was a trifle more gaunt, his hair was flecked with gray, but his thin-lipped mouth was set in the same harsh line, and his dark eyes were as brilliantly dangerous as ever. That was enough, and Reach kept his eyes averted. Namarty, he felt, was not the type of person who would take to someone who could stare him straight in the face. Namarty seemed to devour Reach with his own eyes, but the slight sneer his face always seemed to wear remained. He turned to Andoran, who stood uneasily to one side, and said, quite as though the subject of conversation were not present, "This is the man, then?" Andoran nodded, and his lips moved in a soundless, "Yes, chief." Namarty said to Reach abruptly, "Your name?"
"Planchet, sir."
"You believe in our cause?"
"Yes, sir."
He spoke carefully, in accordance with Andoran's instructions. "I am a Democrat, and want greater participation of the people in the governmental process." Namarty's eyes flicked in Andoran's direction. "A speechmaker." He looked back at Reach. "Are you willing to undertake risks for the cause?"
"Any risk, sir."
"You will do as you are told. No questions, no hanging back."
"I will follow orders."
"Do you know anything about gardening?" Reach hesitated.
"No, sir."
"You're a Trantorian, then, born under the dome?"
"I was born in Millimaru, sir, and I was brought up in Dahl."
"Very well," said Namarty. Then to Andoran, "Take him out and deliver him temporarily to the men waiting there. They will take good care of him. Then come back, Andoran. I want to speak to you." When Andoran returned, a profound change had come over Namarty. His eyes were glittering, and his mouth was twisted into a feral grin. "Andoran," he said, "the gods we spoke of the other day are with us to an extent I couldn't have imagined."
"I told you the man was suitable for our purposes."
"Far more suitable than you think. You know, of course, the tale of how Harry Seldon, our revered First Minister, sent his son, or foster son, rather, to see Joranum, and to set the trap into which Joranum, against my advice, fell."
"Yes," said Andoran, nodding wearily. "I know the story."
He said it with the air of one who knew the story entirely too well. "I saw that boy only that once, but his image burned into my brain. Do you suppose that 10 years' passage and false heels and a shaved mustache could fool me? That planchet of yours is Reach, the foster son of Harry Seldon." Andoran paled and held his breath for a moment. He said,
"Are you sure of that, chief?"
"As sure as I am that you're standing here in front of me, and that you have introduced an enemy into our midst."
"I had no idea."
"Don't get nervous," said Namarty. "I consider it the best thing you have ever done in your idle aristocratic life. You have played the role that the gods have marked out for you. If I had not known who he was, he might have fulfilled the function for which he was undoubtedly intended,
to be a spy in our midst, and an informant of our most secret plans. But since I know who he is, it won't work that way. Instead, we now have everything. Namarti rubbed his hands together in delight, and haltingly, as if he realized how far out of character it was for him, he smiled and laughed.